Romans 15, after taking a bit of a hiatus because of Mother's Day, we saw that Paul had done this great work in terms of just dedicating his life for the sake of the gospel and describing the extent of it by saying that he went from Jerusalem all the way around to Illyricum. So it was not just a walk in the woods or the park for that matter. But to give that picture again in terms of just a geographic span that Paul covered in terms of his ministry, you know, even particularly as we move on and him saying, there was no more work for me to do. I mean, just think about that geographic area and saying, boy, I felt like I've done all that I can in terms of establishing churches, raising up leadership, discipling people in terms of their lives. So he feels like he can move on from that area. Well, to give us a comparison, I mean, basically that distance in terms of Jerusalem to Illyricum was about 1,400 miles, 1,500 miles. And that's just about the distance between North Kingstown and Miami. And so again, just imagine taking 10 years to walk that trek. You know, naturally you'd probably go over into, you know, Pennsylvania and West Virginia and maybe a little bit of Tennessee and then coming back to Miami in terms of that swath that Paul covered. But just think about what that would mean for you in terms of the time taken, the sacrifices made, the passion you would have in terms of that. You know, you think about the people that it's Georgia to Maine, I guess, in terms of the Appalachian Trail. You think about the people that dedicate themselves to say, I'm going to walk the Appalachian Trail. I'm going to, you know, see all these sights and I'm going to climb the mountains and do all that's involved with that. Yeah, that's fine in terms of nature or your own, you know, I need to do that because it's there type thing. You know, you think about the dedication that has been there in terms of making paths and making provisions along the way. Well, just think about a gospel ministry that made the same trek in terms of that. And again, it's truly inspirational as we think about our lives and what we would seek to accomplish for the sake of Christ. Now, as we have been working through this passage, though, we've been looking at what Paul says about himself in terms of him describing himself and the things he did to the Romans as a good pattern for us as we think about what would God call us to as a spiritual leader or a discipler. You know, when we think about, again, the life of Paul, God does not call all of us to be a Paul, but he does call all of us to be disciplers, to have influence over people's lives. And so when we think about, it, again, what God would call about us to in terms of building relationship, certainly having an awareness of the gospel ourselves, and then seeking to pour the life of Christ that is in us to other people. And you know something, Michael? I just saw you. We have to pray at the end. Don't leave until we pray, okay? Sorry about that. Michael is actually... Well, and somewhere in that trek, you know, going to, is it New Jersey? In terms of a program for him, so we're going to pray for him before he leaves. This is the last Sunday that he's going to be here. So again, I apologize for that. But anyways, you know, in terms of, again, the life we have in that God has built in us, passing that on to another person, that's for everyone. That's a call that is on every believer's life. So therefore, it's okay for us all to think about, what would we then become? What would we then do when Paul, I think, effectively presents himself as a model? So we know when he/she has been hard but doesn't back off what is true. We affirm that what others bring to the table, that we're not coming in terms of no influence being in their life or nothing valuable that the one we're discipling brings. We have to be guided by humility and dependence on God. You know, naturally, we saw all this in terms of working through the passage. We're just simply a conduit of the person of Christ, that we no longer live, but Christ lives in us. Remember that when we took a little jaunt into Galatians 2:20 there. But that's what being a gospel minister is. That's what being a discipler is. I'm just trying to be Christ to you. This is not about me teaching you how to be Peter Akin. This is about me teaching you how to be like Jesus in the context of what he has taught me as Peter Akin. And naturally fill in your name in the blank there. certainly you can't teach people how to be Peter Akin, right? He leads others to obedience. You know, we have to remember that is always the goal of the gospel, that even though we're saved by grace, we're saved by faith, that faith is supposed to inspire something. It's supposed to transform. And the greatest indication of the salvation faith that we have in our lives is the obedience that then fosters and the transformation that happens. So again, we're leading others to obedience. Our influence is found in what we say as well as what we do. Like, we don't want to be people that just talk and don't model anything, that don't do anything. You know, if we're leading something, particularly, like I said, we should always be working harder than the people that we're leading. And yet we also don't want to be people that do and don't say anything as well. It's that balance of the model, the example we keep, the model that we present, as well as what we say in teaching and instruction. And then there would be that evidence of the power of God. You know, that's where Paul says when he talks about that ministry that he had, that it was signs and miracles that God did on his behalf to show God, to show the people who he was, and then manifest the power of God. Now, naturally, I present all this because as we continue in the passage, the next point I want to make is in regards to this. And so another quality that we're to attain to as an influencer, as a discipler, as a leader, is that we don't ride on anyone else's coattails. As we read in Romans 15, in verse 20, it says here, "It has always been my ambition to preach the gospel where Christ was not known, so that I would not be building on someone else's foundation. Rather, as it is written, those who were not told about him will see, those who have not heard will understand. This is why I have often been hindered from coming to you." And so again, Paul is talking personally to these Romans as he concludes the letter and is talking about coming to them and why he hasn't been there. But again, when he says here, not riding on anyone else's coattails, you know, Paul really, really desired to be a trailblazer. You know, if there's anything that became popular in our COVID world, it's hiking. And so I'm sure that, you know, many of us, in terms of what we've done over the past years, it probably has included a walk in the woods. And just think about what it meant in terms of all the work that was put in to make that trail. You know, in terms of clearing out brush or making sure the log is not in the middle of the pathway, or, you know, putting a bridge over the little waterways that might be there. You know, all that preparation that was there, you know, basically you are basing your experience on what someone else has done. And Paul says, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy that trods in a path that someone else has laid down. I want to be the guy that's cutting the trail. I'm the guy that wants to come into a place and know there's no work that's been done here. I'm the first person that's presenting the gospel. I'm the first one cutting the brush or clearing the path. And that's the nature of Paul's heart. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, though. I, particularly when we think about our lives, we think about our ministries to people. By definition, we are basing our ministry towards others on other people. You know, even if it is the work of Christ, or even if it is the ministry of Paul, all of us are dependent on the truth that God has professed through other people, in terms of the influence that it is on other people's lives. But I also would say, in the context of that, we all need to bring something of our own to the table as well. You know, I particularly would think, in terms of us being a leader, you know, maybe even identifying your spiritual gift. You know, what is it that you bring to the table yourself? Like, in other words, if you're a teacher, but when you're teaching, you're always looking at the notes of someone else. So you're listening to all these sermons that other people are teaching and all these things, and the only thing you're sharing is what other people have said. I mean, again, to be informed by that, to be guided by that, to be inspired by that is fine, but in the context of that, you're not bringing something of your own to the table? Well, all it means is you probably don't have that gift. It's really not something that God, you know, that, now I think that there's an aspect that you know, the need is the call, that sometimes even if you don't have a gift in a particular area, you go and you do. But an indication of God leading and guiding you into something is that you bring something to the table. that, okay, maybe you're listening to what someone else is teaching, or you're listening to some other information, but there's also something God is inspiring in you, that there's something you understand about the truth of God, or again, you want to be the landscaper, and you want to do the thing, and you're always looking at other people's landscaping plans, and always looking at other people's bushes, and so on and so forth. Well, you know, what about what you have to bring to the table? So to me, if I'm always looking for application, I'm always looking for how does this impact us in terms of what Paul is communicating about himself, and again, to what extent are we trailblazers? And I think when it comes to us in terms of the roles that God has for us in other people's lives, maybe even particularly when we think about the roles he gives us when it comes to our spiritual gifts, an indication of you having a certain spiritual gift is you find that you bring something to the table. And not even so much because of who you are, but what God has inspired in you. You know, I always thought that it would be a great thing to organize ministry of the church around spiritual gifts. In other words, get all the encouragers together. Get all the people with the gift of mercy. Get all the people with the gifts of administration together and have them talk about it. Because don't you love to be encouraged by an encourager? You know, don't they have something in terms of their lives? Like, I would never think to say that, you know? And so what I'm saying is that, you know, what our spiritual gift brings to us is, again, something that God inspires, something that God brings up in us that isn't about depending on other people. And so that's an aspect of what we would seek to be, again, as we seek to be an influencer, as we seek to even think about ministry that God would have for us in a body of believers or in the community or whatever it might be, that what is coming from us? You know, again, it's fine to depend on the work of other people or have that assist you, but I think there's always something that God would bring to the table, that you would bring to the table, you know, naturally based in your relationship with God. But I think this is also another indicator of Paul's drive and conviction. You know, certainly there's things that we learn in terms of our lives from what Paul is saying, but it's just another indicator of just the nature of who Paul was. You know, when you think about, well, you know, because I think about, you know, I wasn't even a trailblazer. I'd like to say that I was a trailblazer starting Living Hope Christian Church, but you know something, 40 people from New Hope Christian Church joined me, so I really wasn't a trailblazer. But there is something beneficial to being the guy that is the only pastor. You know, there's no reference, well, maybe from you, for those of you who have come from another church, you might look at me and say, well, my pastor never did that. But you're in like this place, and so therefore, like, there's never been someone else teaching you, encouraging you, being the shepherd in the midst of all the life circumstances you're in. You know, it's traditionally difficult for someone to come in after a long-term pastor and come in and take over ministry. Because again, so part of the benefit of being a trailblazer is there's no reference point you have to someone else's mistakes or someone else's personality. And so, you know, so as far as Paul, you know, having this conviction, having this passion, you know, a bigger part of it is to his credit. But there's also a benefit that comes that, again, I don't have to correct what someone else has done. I don't have to say, well, that guy said this, but now all of a sudden you have to understand it's this over here in terms of that truth. And so, but when you think about the challenge that exists in that, again, it's not wrong to think about the benefit that comes in being a trailblazer, but when you think about Paul's passion and conviction to say, yeah, I want to go to the guy that hasn't heard it before. I don't want the guy that already has the arguments. I don't want that's heard the explanations, the different, you know, understandings of Jesus. I want to go to the guy, the gal that hasn't heard about Jesus at all. And that's what his passion was. So you can decide to what extent that's to Paul's benefit or his passion. But it's also, I think, a bit different in our world today. When you think about how suspect the world is to the message of God, the message of Scripture, the message of Christ. And so to recognize that when we're talking to someone, it's probably beneficial. Oh, you've had a believer in your life? You've heard the gospel before? The cross isn't a foreign concept to you? You know, have you ever met the unbeliever that can explain the gospel to you better than you can? and yet they don't believe? You know, and so, you know, we recognize that, studies show that people probably need to hear the gospel 7 or 8 times before they get to that place of faith. And so we're in a different situation than Paul would be in terms of, hey, I'm the first guy. Like, there really was no one else going into these areas and preaching the gospel. But that was fine for Paul, as well as he didn't want to do anything different. Like, it's both the reality of what he was facing, in addition, just what twinned with who he was. Rather, as it is written, those who are not told about him will see. Those who have not heard will understand. This is why I often have been hindered from coming to you. You know, I would turn to Isaiah chapter 52, but we really don't have time. That's your homework assignment. Like, basically, Paul loves to quote Scripture as he's making his points. He particularly likes quoting Isaiah. And so basically, Isaiah 52:15 is at the beginning of Isaiah talking about the suffering servant. You know, right before that, it talks about, blessed are the feet of him who bring good news, announcing peace and happiness. Our guard reigns, you know, that song. That comes from Isaiah 52. And then it talks about, you know, he was marred. You know, you couldn't even recognize him in terms of who this suffering servant is. And then really speaking to the power and influence of Christ, of Messiah, what Isaiah is saying is his message will be so powerful that even people that don't hear of him will know him. People that don't even understand will believe, in terms of just the impact of the ministry of Christ on the world. And that's what Isaiah 52 is pointing to. But like I said, you can read that on your own. Just see the powerful context that Paul is pulling from in terms of this verse. But, you know, just to finish this, in terms of just all these things that would be an example for us as a leader, as a discipler, as the teacher, as the influencer, there's another very important one in the next passage. So let's get there for the last one. But let me read it before you bring the slide up. But now that there is, this is verse 23, by the way, in Romans 15. But now that there is no more place for me to work in these regions, and since I have been longing for many years to see you, I plan to do so when I go to Spain. I hope to visit you while passing through and to have you assist me on my journey there. After I have enjoyed your company for a while, now, however, I am on my way to Jerusalem in the service of the saints there. For Macedonia and Achaia were pleased to make a contribution for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. They were pleased to do it, and indeed they owe it to them. For the Gentiles have shared in the Jews' spiritual blessing. They owe it to the Jews to share with them their material blessings. So after I have completed the task and have made sure that they have received this fruit, I will go to Spain and visit you on the way. I know that when I come to you, I will come in the full measure of the blessing of Christ. Now, what's very significant, let's go beyond that. You can look at that slide on the website. If you care about the Greek words happening in that portion where Paul is expressing his passion about it's been my ambition, you can look at that slide and look at what it says. But moving on to the next point, that the last quality here of a spiritual leader, influencer, discipler is you can be strategic, but always be open to how God can change your good, godly plans. I'm amazed by what Paul writes here, because what Paul is laying out here is, hey, this is my idea, my best intention in terms of what God would call me to as the discipler, as the church planner, as, you know, all the things that I would seek to be, and going from Jerusalem to Illyricum, I'm going to bring this offering to the poor in Jerusalem. And I'm going to go there. I'm going to negotiate through all the challenges that exist. I know it's going to be hard, but you know something? I'm going to go from there. I'm going to go to Rome, and I'm going to go to Spain. And that's exactly what didn't happen. And so what's amazing is that, again, Paul is being strategic. He's doing the best he can, thinking about, hey, what would I do in terms of my influence on the Gentile church? You know, I think in many ways, Paul is coming full circle in planning this. He started in Jerusalem. The gospel started in Jerusalem. He always returned to Jerusalem in terms of reconnecting there. You know, when you think about the Council of Jerusalem, where Paul comes and defends and describes the work of God amongst the Gentiles, and what did they say? What did the apostles say to Paul according to Galatians 2:10? He said, okay, you go to the Gentiles, we'll go to the Jews, but just remember the poor. Remember that in Galatians 2:20? And what did Paul say? I was glad to do that. And so when he thinks about all that started in terms of God's plan around Jerusalem with the Jews, and now he's sent as this trailblazer renegade up to the Gentiles, bringing the gospel to the pagans, going to those that are not Jewish, and now inspiring them to say, you know something? You have wealth. You have prosperity. There's famine in Jerusalem. There's poverty in Jerusalem. Those people that have believed in Jesus, now all of a sudden, maybe they don't have the jobs they used to have. You know, they had a position in the temple. A lot of people in Jerusalem would work at the temple. Well, now all of a sudden, when you become a believer in Jesus, maybe you got shut out in terms of the leadership there. And so whatever the conditions were that created this poverty in Jerusalem, as Paul is ministering to the Gentiles, hey, what do you think we should do? This is what I see that God would have us do in terms of providing for the people in Jerusalem. So Paul is seeing this, again, as bringing things full circle in terms of the work of God and the way the influence of Christ would go and move in people's lives to orient them to his priorities, to say, now, it's not about your life. It's not even just about you as Gentiles. We got to help the Jews. We got to recognize the debt we have to them. But for their life and their relationship with God and all that God revealed through them, where would we be? You know, in Romans, we saw that we're just grafted in branches. Like, we have no rights in our own in terms of Gentiles. So the spiritual heritage that we've received from them, it's only fitting that we share our financial blessings. And if you wanted to read, you know, about Paul encouraging the church to give, that would be 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9, where he's talking to them about the monetary gift he's asking them for. But this is all Paul's plan, again, to bring things full circle, where, to me, I think he's trying to end the chapter. Like, he sees God saying, you know something? Rome used to be the place. That was the goal. Like, I was doing all this stuff, and I'm going to the Greeks, and I'm going to Asia Minor and all the places he visited. But now the things I'm hearing about what's going on in Spain, all these people in Roman society that are Spanish and come from Spain. You know, I gotta get over there. Like, this part over here is done. I've done what I can. I've planted the churches. I've written the books. I've written the apostles. You know something? That chapter of my life is gone. That's Paul's thought. Again, that's his plan. Very strategic, right? You know, in other words, if I've got several churches in this area where, you know, I can still write letters, I can get communication, I can still be the apostle, I can still, like, help, but you know something? My time there is done. I think Paul is thinking, I'm going to do the same thing to the West. I'm going to do the same thing to Spain. You know, when you think about Paul, in terms of even his upbringing, being a Mediterranean person, you know, many commenters actually say that, you know, maybe what Paul is actually thinking about is circling the Mediterranean with the influence of Christ in terms of all the shipping and influence that was there in terms of, you know, people and commerce. But they believe that other people were taking the southern part of that, in terms of Egypt and Alexandria and northern Africa. And so therefore, Paul saw his ministry to be, I'm going to complete the top portion. You know, I believe that if there was something lacking in the southern portion, if Paul ended in Spain, he'd say, okay, I'm going to the south. But actually, I mean, church tradition does say that he went to Spain. Church tradition does say that he actually went from Spain to Britain, but there's no actual fact that he did that. Like, most people believe he didn't, and we just have to understand that sometimes we can't trust church history. That sometimes church history did want to put a glossier picture on someone that was really there. But the whole point in this, again, this is Paul's plan. It's a good plan. It's a godly plan. It's for the gospel. And yet, in Jerusalem, what happens? He's bound. He's in prison. This is where we are in the book of Acts on Wednesday night. You know, it's just funny how the way God would orchestrate things. We're in Romans 15 here where Paul is talking about his plan. And on Wednesday nights, we're working through all the ways God didn't do what Paul says he's going to do here. That basically what happens is Paul is imprisoned in Jerusalem because of him sensing that he's not going to get a fair trial in Jerusalem. Actually, it's in Caesarea, so it's in Palestine, but in northwest to the Mediterranean. But anyways, the point being, he didn't think he'd get a fair trial, so as a Roman citizen, he would have a right to appeal to Caesar. And so he appeals to Caesar. That's where we left this past Wednesday. And so therefore, to Caesar you have desired, to Caesar you will go, or something, whatever he did, Festus says to him. But anyways, yeah, that's secondary. But in other words, this is what's happening to Paul. So Paul is now a prisoner. He's viewed as a criminal in terms of what the Jews have charged him with. And so he's going over to Rome under Roman protection and under Roman jurisprudence, and there he will die. And so therefore, again, you're a gospel minister, you're a discipler, you're a leader, you want to take the things of God and pour them into all those lives, great, make your plans, come up with your strategies, think about the best thing you would do, but always be open to God saying, nah, not going to be that, it's going to be this. No, you're not going to go here, you're going to go there. And so we just always have to be open to what God does, both in terms of his leading, in terms of what his Spirit says, in terms of prayer and the conversations we have, and what is happening in his word in terms of what God is instructing you in, but then certainly circumstance. Sometimes circumstance is the greatest communicator in what God can work through in terms of showing us what he's planning and what he's designing. You know, but we always have to be pressed into God. We always have, you know, like something that we've dealt with in the Wednesday night Bible study is you think about Paul even going to Jerusalem. You know, some people believe that Paul shouldn't have gone to Jerusalem, that this plan should have happened. Like, this was what God wanted. But Paul was just convinced that God wanted him to go to Jerusalem, and particularly in terms of giving this gift, that the greatest extension that could come from this Gentile church is to bring this money. And who better than the representative of the church of the Gentiles, the former Pharisee, the guy who knew the law, was probably more hated by the Jews than respected by them, but some connection there, and bring the gift to Jerusalem. And Paul was just convinced that that's what God was leading him to do. And so therefore, what we have resolved in, well, the way I resolve in that is Paul was so pressed into God. Paul was so available in terms of all that God would lead him in. I trust Paul's judgment in terms of what he did. But in terms of what then God did, in light of that, shows that God's plan wasn't this. That God's plan was for him to be in prison. What was for him to be in prison and write letters. Many of the letters that he wrote to the churches were written in prison. You know, people coming and visiting him and informing him of what was going on in the church. But eventually, like I said, he will go to Rome and he will die. And God changed the plan. And that's what we always have to be aware of. In spite of what we think is going to happen, even the strategic nature of, I believe, how we should be, and thinking about how we live out our Christian lives, particularly how we influence the gospel, for the gospel and unbelievers. But we always have to be open to, again, how God is going to change that. We won't get to that. We'll save that for, because really what happens is kind of neat in this passage is that it moves from, okay, here's the example, here's the teaching, here's the standards of if you're the leader, if you're the influencer, if you're the teacher, if you're the gospel minister, and then where it goes is a couple of things that it will say about what those who would support the gospel minister, the people who would support the leader, support the person that's doing the spiritual thing, and what God how God would involve other people in that. So let's bow and let's pray. Father, to understand that you are a God that is orchestrating a plan for everything, and you want to use us in that plan, Father, certainly, first and foremost, we need to know you. We need to get to know you. We need to grow in you. We need to grow in the influence of your Son and your Spirit and your Word in our lives, so we can hear your voice and be sensitive to it. We can abide in you and then allow the vine to feed us and bear its fruit through us. And so, Father, I pray that more and more we'd be the kind of people that press into you through your word, through prayer, through your Spirit, through worship, through the fellowship of believers. I do pray that you would just direct us in terms of just the people I would be praying for, the people I would be caring for, the people I would be sharing my faith with. Father, create opportunities. Give me eyes to see. Help me to see unbelievers like you see them. And just help me to continue to rely on you to be your ambassador, but then to strategize in terms of how we best might communicate the gospel to our neighbor, to our family member, to our friends, to this community. But Father, lead and guide us. Show us in terms of the way you would work in our hearts and in circumstance to what your plans are, because that's what we want. We don't want to do our plans. We want to do your plans, but we want to be prepared to do your plan. Help us to be prepared. It is in your Son, Jesus Christ's name, that we do pray. Amen.